You're listening to Dietitian Power Hour with Morgan, Cody, and Libby. Grab a drink and enjoy.
But anywho, what are you guys drinking?
I'm drinking a Bengal spice hot tea.
Ooh,
so good.
Sounds
yeah,
nice.
Yeah, I had a beer earlier, like right after work, and it made me so happy. It was a little Corona with a lime, and it made me feel like I was on the beach for a second. And then it got later, and I didn't really feel like having another drink. So now I'm having hot tea, and it's really nice.
Sounds awesome.
What do you think?
Nice.
I didn't, or I'm not drinking today, mostly because I didn't have my poop in a group. So I've just finished dinner and we went out and got milkshakes. And so I'm drinking a chocolate shake and it's quite delicious.
Yum. Cody?
Oh, yeah. So.
This is like, cool, checked out.
Cody's drunk.
Yeah, I wish, no. I have not gotten that far yet. Actually, I'm not drinking anything right now, but I had some chocolate and maybe I'll have some white wine. I do have that here.
Ooh, a little,
oh, that sounds yummy with some fish tacos.
Yeah.
A little Sauv Blanc.
Exactly.
Morgan likes to feel like a bougie bitch.
I do my best. I'm a wine girl.
Her Sauv Blanc and her Pinot Gris.
I'm a wine girl.
So
yeah, you are.
So today we're talking about not anorexia, orthorexia.
Yes.
Right.
Orthorexia, and just a little disclaimer and sensitivity warning. We're talking a lot about disordered eating, and it could be really sensitive subjects for some people. So just a heads up before we get into it, orthorexia is a form of disordered eating. So if that's a trigger for you, yeah, just a heads up.
I think it's nice to recognize because it's a real thing that people struggle with and it's not easy. And I know a lot of people out there at least know someone who, you know, might struggle with this, or you may struggle with it yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's probably more common than we know yet. So I'm happy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it still isn't actually like a recognized eating disorder. It's like eating disorders of unspecified something. I can't remember what the term is, but it's not like technically considered to be its own eating. It is, but it isn't so labeled because science moves slow, I guess.
Right. And I think I still haven't figured out the best way to define it, because I say it's a form of disordered eating, but it's not recognized by the DSM-5, which is like the holy grail textbook for diagnosing any mental disorders, which eating disorders are classified as a mental disorder. So it's not yet recognized by the DSM-5 as an eating disorder, but it is a form of disordered eating, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we should talk about that a little bit. I was reading my old book that I promised you guys I would share with you forever ago, an eating disorder book that's really exceptional, super well written, very, it's really eye opening for someone who doesn't, you know, who's never struggled with an eating disorder, and who hasn't really ever been around people who have struggled with eating disorders in my younger life. I guess I have more as an adult, but when I read that book, I hadn't. Anyway, it's just really nice, and it like explains, you know, is an eating disorder versus disordered eating patterns. And I think Morgan summed it up pretty well on whether it's recognized by the ESM-5 or whether or not it just has features of an eating disorder, and then it would be a disordered eating, right? Did I explain that okay? It's like hard to explain.
Well, I think because the kind of standard that we're going to is the DSM-5, right? From the American Psychiatric Association, I believe.
Yeah, that's great.
It's the big book with all the currently recognized mental illnesses and criteria, like diagnostic criteria. So that has certain eating disorders, currently, and orthorexia is not recognized as one of them.
Right. And I think I have a feeling it will be. I don't know. That's just based off of,
you think?
I don't know. I kind of feel like it will be, but it's been around since, I read online that it's been around since like 1998. So
the
term orthorexia is not a new term, but I think that orthorexia in general is much more common now, which we'll get into more later, like social media and health influencers and everything like that, that might impact orthorexia. We'll get into that more, but I do think that orthorexia is more common and probably like more severe than it's been in the past.
Mm. See, this is interesting because I want to come back to this though, because I don't think it will be included officially. But
oh, interesting. Okay, and I have thoughts on that. It was the same. I have thoughts on that as well. That I agree with Morgan that I think it will be. And I think it's personally because of how our society currently is. And I think that there's going to be a lot of things that we've never labeled or mm-hmm. recognized that are going to come to the surface in the next decade, right. even. You know, I think it's going to be pretty sudden that we're going to have a lot more recognized mental health conditions and eating disorders and just, you know, social disorders, all sorts of things that haven't been truly recognized or studied.
Absolutely. Because mental health is, I feel like, less of a stigma than it used to be. And we're all a little more, I think our generation and the generation below us, we're all a little more accepting of talking about mental health. And so I hope that we're headed in the right direction, Libby, of what you just said.
Yeah, me too. Maybe it's mostly wishful thinking, I guess, on my part, but yeah. I'm all for, you know, this mental health push that we're having. So
yes. Okay. So have we defined orthorexia?
No, it's been just looming over them.
Okay. So like Libby mentioned, it was coined in 1998. I'm reading this from the National Eating Disorders Association. So it says it's coined in 1998, and the term orthorexia means an obsession with proper or healthful eating. And then it says people with orthorexia become so fixated on so-called healthy eating that they actually damage their own well-being.
So it's more of like a focus on the quality of your food, whereas other eating disorders are focused on, I mean, like anorexia, for example, it's more of a focus on
quantity. You're just restricting
it's restriction.
Overall.
Whereas orthorexia is more of a restriction on the types of food you eat. So you might cut out certain foods that you've labeled as bad, or you're very focused on the ingredients of your food, or like compulsive mm-hmm. checking of nutrition labels and stuff like that. So it's more of a focus on like clean eating, for example.
Yeah.
I also thought it was kind of interesting. I read on the National Eating Disorder Association website as well, that it does not necessarily have a body image component, which I also thought was really interesting because most, and maybe this is why it's not classified, right? Most eating disorders, that's a huge part of them, is the body image piece.
Right.
You know, restricting calories to look a certain way or... Mm-hmm. You know, and so I thought that was really kind of, because I just didn't think of it, I guess, as not being a factor.
Right.
I just assumed it would be, I guess. I don't know.
You know what I thought of too, Libby, is it's interesting because I feel like lately we've had a huge focus as a society and like in the health profession, or not even the health profession, but just like quote unquote healthy eating. A huge focus on like, where did your food come from and what's in your food and keeping it
kind of
the source of your food. And I feel,
or the story.
Yes, exactly. And not only that, but just like the quality of your food. So I feel almost like we're fueling orthorexia a little bit with that focus.
I agree 115%, Morgan, but it's also, I mean, we're a big push from so many like organic companies and stuff, not bashing on organics at all, okay, but a huge part of their marketing is fear mongering. Mm-hmm. Like, think about all of these advertisements, and it's like, oh, this is full of pesticides, and it's going to give you cancer, and you're going to die. And, like, research doesn't support that. Science doesn't support that. It's just hearsay. It's people who are really uneducated about our food system. And so we're 100% feeding into this. We're making people believe that if they don't, quote unquote, eat clean, they're going to get cancer and die, or they're going to be obese and die. And that's so not.
And then you have food companies. We've talked about this before too, but yes, like the fear mongering, you have food companies, you know, just catering to people's collective anxieties by maybe putting on the label only five ingredients, you know, as if that makes it cleaner and better. And so I think it's just all kind of adds up. People are chasing this ideal. And I think the key is it can just become disordered when you start getting this obsession and this fear around eating. Right.
And it's,
and it limits your life and what you're able to do.
It does, because people with orthorexia might get like severe anxiety going out to eat at a restaurant where they haven't had a chance to evaluate the menu and make sure there's something healthy there. Or if they can't control everything that's going into their food, they might get anxiety over that because some of the ingredients that might be going into their food isn't what they have labeled as healthy. So things like that, like going out to eat or going to birthday parties or things like that, can be really anxiety provoking for people with orthorexia.
Yeah, absolutely. Traveling at all in any shape or form wouldn't even be possible. Going to someone's, you know, house to eat dinner. So many limitations, I think. And
so you just end up not doing those things, and it really starts to suck that joy out of your life bit by bit. That sounds dramatic. Well, but it really can add up to that point, right?
Well, if there's anything COVID has taught us, it is not dramatic, Cody. Like, we have all been locked in our homes for a fucking year. Yeah.
Right.
Like, I mean, it's terrifying, honestly. Like, just to think that potentially as a society, we're not forcing, but we're facilitating this for other people is really so troublesome to me, you know, like we are feeding into issues for individuals who need our support and our help, and not to be told that we're poisoning them.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And we talk, I mean, I've said this before on this podcast, but I'm a huge proponent of mental health. I think that, you know, food, it's important, and your overall diet is important, and we're not saying you shouldn't be concerned about the food, but it's okay to care about what you eat. But once it becomes an obsession and it takes a toll on your mental health, that's where it's not healthy anymore, because your mental health is just as important as the food that you're eating.
Morgan, I was just going to bring that up too, because it's such a fine line. Like, of course you want to strive for kind of a healthier diet and really be aware that you're getting that balance and pay attention to how you feel and everything. But the key is when you get orthorexia, means you've become over obsessive about that. I actually found that there's a couple studies that show orthorexia as being more common. I mean, it's common that people also have obsessive compulsive disorder with it. So,
okay.
Which that doesn't really surprise me, because you're just obsessing.
Right. And I think too, I am not an expert in mental health in any way, but I'm kind of wondering, like, with orthorexia, I could see how it would give people a really tight sense of control over something, which, I don't know, OCD and anxiety kind of would have not similar effects, but I think it's in the same realm. And with those mental disorders, it might, like, they might cope in a way of trying to find control somewhere in their life and finding that in food.
I don't know if you guys know, but I was actually a psych major for a couple years in school before switching
to nutrition.
And I took Yeah, I was thinking I was gonna go into it. But I remember taking an abnormal psychology class, and I just never forgot. You know, we learned about the DSM-5 and just kind of the different classifications of mental illness and like the criteria. And but the main thing I took from those classes was it's not a mental illness until it causes distress in your life. So if you think about it, we've all experienced periods of depression. We've probably a lot of us have experienced like mania, really. We've all probably had more than a few obsessive thoughts at times, but that doesn't mean you have chronic depression. It doesn't mean you have obsessive compulsive disorder unless it starts to just become a burden on your life and like disable you from functioning. So, and there's specific criteria for those different disorders, but that's where I think it's interesting with orthorexia because it is such a fine line, especially now with wellness culture and people kind of popularizing like, no, you have to stick to your plan. You don't take days off. You have to improve yourself and kind of do these rigid guidelines, you know, when it comes to diet. It's like normalized.
Absolutely.
It's honestly, it's so scary. We're like regimented little soldiers. That's how I feel about meal prep and like diehard fitness enthusiasts and all of that. And it as someone whose biggest fear in life is working a 9-to-5 job, I've officially decided that's what would cause me the most angst because I don't like things that seem routine. Like even like working from home has been really awful for me because it's very routine. I have the exact same fucking schedule all day, every day, and it's miserable and I hate it. Okay. But it's just like so angsty to me that everybody on Instagram who wants to be a health influencer is like, all right, I've meal prepped these exact same things. Every day I wake up at 5 a.m. and I eat this, and then I do
Very
this, and then
regimented.
I exercise, and then I eat this. And then the next day, it's like Groundhog's Day, real life, like over and over and over. And it's like, how are you as an individual who has no like prior knowledge of health, wellness, fitness, overall, obtaining your goals in a practical way, how are you supposed to think there is any other way?
Yeah, well, and what makes this very rigid, like kind of no pain, no gain approach better? I mean, do we really think that your life will actually be better if even if there was the so-called perfect diet, if you have to kick yourself every day to obtain that standard, are you really well? Is that healthy? Overall, I don't
Right.
know.
What are your blood pressure levels at? Because you're so stressed out every day.
Right. I think that what I'm getting at is like it's dynamic, right? Every day can
Yeah,
be different.
absolutely.
Absolutely. And should be. That's the only way we can achieve personal growth as humans is through a little spontaneity,
Yes, I
folks.
agree. And I also saw on the National Eating Disorders website that one of the signs of orthorexia is obsessive following of food and like healthy lifestyle blogs on social media, which I think is so interesting because it does kind of just, it's kind of a cycle. Like you're only following these people that are quote unquote healthy and look a certain way and are recommending all these really strict diets or workout regimens. And so that's all you really see. And it's kind of like, you know how I feel like everybody has that like healthy friend that always gets a salad at dinner and eat like meal preps the whole week. And I just think that we're kind of praising that culture a little bit, and it's just really toxic. Like we
Yes.
see.
How many times has someone, have you seen someone or have you told someone when they're like, oh yeah, I meal prep, burp, 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 and they're like, oh my gosh, good for you. 'Cause that's how we respond to things that we are uncomfortable with. But, like, oh good, that's amazing. Look at your dedication. Good for you. We praise,
Yeah.
this.
And not that there is anything wrong with cooking and being prepared and kind of, you know, being on top of things. But when it becomes this overly rigid plan, like you can only eat these foods.
Yeah.
You know,
I think that's the problem, like, is that even with people that are potentially orthorexic, we praise that. Like we see that and we're like, wow, they're so healthy. I wish I could be like that. When realistically it's really not healthy at all.
Yeah. Yep. So what point do you guys think it becomes orthorexia, or how can we kind of, you know, check that line?
I think it's the flexibility and
just wanting to.
Flexibility is huge. Like being able to go out to eat and go to celebrations and try foods that might not fit your standard of healthy, or not even having that standard of healthy. I feel like flexibility is really big, because it seems like with orthorexia, a lot of the signs of orthorexia is like very strict on what types of food you will and will not eat.
Which I did want to jump in really quick on that, because it does not only have to be like quote unquote healthy eating in terms of clean eating, or whatever. It can be like people who obsessively carb count, that counts as orthorexia. I feel like that needed to be stated. It could be anything, whether you're so focused on protein, you just hyper focused on some aspect of your food, or elimination of an entire food group, not due to a health
and
concern,
this is
like an allergy or an intolerance or.
Yeah. This is where it can really be sneaky, because, you know, and it just depends on the degree to which you're worrying about these things. Because I've seen people who are so scared of added sugars. They won't eat any added sugar. They are in tears if you suggest that they need to eat it. I mean, this was a specific story I'm thinking about, I guess. A case at the job I work at where we had a patient, an eating disorder patient actually, who, you know, part of the refeeding protocol when you have to be admitted to the hospital for eating disorder recovery is we have to feed them, you know, and if they don't eat the food that they're given, they have to drink an oral nutrition supplement with the equivalent calories that the meal would have provided. And that supplement has added sugars. So this was actually a patient's mom who was so worried about her kid getting added sugar.
Oh my gosh.
And I kind of explained, you know, why we use the supplement and that his body actually needs the source of carbohydrate to, you know, recover. And she was really upset because she believed that sugar causes cancer.
Oh my gosh.
And so I would say this family in general had a lot of just collective anxiety around that, you know, around the sugar. And I don't know if the mom had orthorexia or if the kid had orthorexia that then led to his anorexia.
Oh my gosh.
That's it's like totally, it could be, I mean, that. Oh. It could be an obsession with protein. It could be an obsession with clean eating that kind of takes people down this path to the point where they're not okay anymore, and it's not healthy. Even.
Yeah. And then as soon as, you know, and I think the most telling sign, as soon as it disrupts any part of your daily life, you know, and I don't mean like inconveniences in terms of you have to cook or you choose not to go out because of, you know, you have groceries in the fridge or whatever. I mean, like you get angst going out, or when you go out with friends, you, and it's for dinner, you do not eat, or, you know, there's anything that,
or you're worrying about it the whole time.
Yes, that doesn't allow you to fully enjoy yourself and be in the moment. That's when it, and obviously, I mean, not obviously, I've never had, as I said, I've never had an eating disorder. So this is so hard, because I know, though, based on what I've learned in class and through books, it's that you don't know that you have an eating disorder, right? We're not aware of it. We're not aware
that
we're so hyper focused. And so that's where, you know, as a friend or as a clinician or as a parent or a classmate or whatever, that's where your power of observation comes really handy. And then your power of tact is even handier to bring that up and to
Yeah.
discuss that with someone. I mean, I think it takes a lot of balls to talk to someone about a potential eating disorder. Like, you got to have some cojones on you to go
Absolutely.
for it, I think, because that's a really uncomfortable conversation. I'm uncomfortable talking about it alone in my spare bedroom to you guys because I'm just thinking about, who's going to listen to this, and I know nothing about their lives, or and I don't want to upset anybody. And I
I don't know
definitely
if
don't want
there's
to tell
a
you how to feel because fuck, I don't know, but
I don't know if there's a right way to kind of intervene when it comes to orthorexia, which is so difficult, but I don't know. What do you guys think? I think there is for anorexia, and I think when it's anorexia, or like a more restricting type eating disorder, there's kind of more concrete health consequences that are going to follow. And so that's where, I think
And
we have
easier
to,
to
coming from a
address
place of
to find
concern,
it. Yeah.
easier to
Well,
identify it.
I think as a
yeah,
friend,
absolutely.
if you have the balls to even bring it up, just encourage them to seek out like a counselor or a dietitian. There are dietitians that are specialized in eating disorders. They'd be really helpful to talk to, or any type of like counselor or psychiatrist. But having that conversation and encouraging, if it's going well, to get professional help, I think that's the best thing you can do.
I agree. And it's like it depends on the relationship, but and it's never going to be easy breezy. And I don't think you could really give a script because it depends so much. But part of the problem, I think, because the nature of eating disorders, we get so good, or the person becomes so good at convincing themselves and others that there's not a problem. Because they can't recognize, if they have body dysmorphia along with it, they don't recognize that it's a problem when people around them might be really concerned with like their weight loss or something. So it's difficult, but I think it ends up being part of the problem when other people are too scared to say anything and do anything, because it's like that bystander effect. Everyone sees something going on, but everyone thinks someone else is going to do something about it.
Yeah,
And
absolutely.
it
And we
has to come
don't,
from a place of concern, but
yeah. And it's
yeah.
like not our nature to be confrontational in that way. We're confrontational when someone cuts us in line, but we're not confrontational when it comes to somebody's health. Which is something that I am personally trying to work on because I have acquaintances that and friends and family members and all sorts of people who have, maybe not a full-blown eating disorder or a full-blown orthorexia or but definite or even just when it comes to misconceptions about food. But it's so hard when you're in the moment and somebody's obsessively counting their carbohydrates and they're like, "Oh my gosh, did you just eat a piece of cake? Oh, I want a piece of cake." Like that kind of thing. It's so hard to not just be like, "Eat the fucking piece of cake," and be a little bitchy about it because I'm like, "I want to enjoy my cake and here you are, just staring at it and being weird and like and again, as I'm just saying, right? Obviously, I'm not good at approaching it because I'm
But food
very
is such a
abrupt about it, but it's so
food
difficult.
choices and food is can be a really personal thing, and you don't want to be all up in people's grill.
Exactly. I don't want someone to comment on the French fries and the milkshake that I had for dinner, okay? So I'm not going to comment on what they're eating. But if they're not eating, or if their way of eating is visibly disrupting their life, I want to say something, but how do we approach it? What's the best way to?
That's where I don't know if there is any one good way to approach, especially with orthorexia. And you'd have to be pretty close to a person to kind of think about this, but it's not going to do any good if you just go around diagnosing people and if you kind of start pointing out to someone, because what do people do? They resist. And they're going to be like, if you tell me I'm eating too healthy, like, fuck you. Like, buzz off, butt out, leave me alone. And they're not going to even consider then. So it's really tricky. It's like that person, I think, has to, on some level, realize mm-hmm. that they have a problem. Whereas with anorexia, it's more critical that we intervene.
Right. And Cody, can you describe a little more about like the difference between anorexia and orthorexia and like the danger of anorexia compared to orthorexia?
Yeah. Well, anorexia is just a like restrictive eating disorder. So it manifests in extreme weight loss, whether that's because you don't like the way your body looks, or you think you're fat, or you think that you would look more muscular if you restrict, or you just want to lose a lot of weight really quickly. These are psychological disorders, but with anorexia, you restrict your food intake, and so you lose a ton of weight, and then, you know, health-wise, that devastates the body because it essentially puts you into starvation mode. You use all of your fat stores. Your body starts to harvest energy from its own muscles, you know, breaking down the amino acids in your muscle tissue for energy. And your heart starts to slow down at night to dangerously low rates, to where you could literally die in your sleep because your body's trying to conserve energy. So yeah, a lot of times it's, you know, I work with people with anorexia in the hospital. So a lot of times they are to these kind of dangerous places. And when you get to that point, your body has been deprived for so long that it starts to divert energy away from even like digestion. So a lot of times they will have like GI symptoms when they eat things because their GI tract isn't used to processing food. They haven't had the protein and the nutrition stores to like create enzymes for the digestive process. And, you know, the body starts to divert blood flow and energy towards those critical organs like your brain, your heart, your lungs. So that's kind of, there's a lot of things that a lot that goes into like the physiology of starvation. And of course, then the danger is if you just give someone who's been starving food, you run the risk for refeeding syndrome. So they discovered refeeding syndrome during the war, like after the concentration camp victims were liberated, that they would give them candy bars, and then they just found people like dying suddenly, and it was refeeding syndrome.
I did not realize that was World War II is when that was discovered. That makes sense, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. It's when they really started to observe it like as a thing. Which refeeding syndrome basically then with that comes, so your body, there's a lot that goes into it, but the salts and the electrolytes in your body start to shift really rapidly. So once you introduce a bunch of glucose, sodium, potassium into the bloodstream, all these cells in your tissues that have been depleted for so long start to rapidly like take that up. And then what happens is your blood serum levels of like phosphorus will drop really low, which then can cause like heart arrhythmias, and then you can die that way. So anorexia is dangerous. I know we're mainly talking about orthorexia, but this is something that I care about because I think, you know, a lot of the patients I've worked with who have anorexia, I think started from a place of orthorexia. And then it can progress, you know, to that restriction. Because by the time you have so many food rules and eliminate so many different like unclean or unsafe foods, it's actually hard to meet your nutrition needs with, you know,
Yeah, if you limit
Right. What's left?
a whole food group, and especially, I mean, I think if it comes from a place of, because oftentimes eating disorders come from a place of control, right? Needing to control some aspect of your life. There's a lot of really interesting research regarding, what's the broken homes, just traumatic childhoods, all sorts of things that feed
Like the
into eating
cycle.
disorders. Yes, the cycle, and then so it's something that you can control. So I think from a control aspect with orthorexia, right, it could easily progress into anorexia because you start with, oh, I'm going to eat clean, and then you change that to, oh, I'm not going to eat anything processed at all, and then it changes to, I'm not going to eat meat, or I'm not going to eat carbs, or and then before you know it, you're eating one piece of lettuce a day, and you end up in the hospital, and you progress from being really health conscious and in your intake to limiting your intake to the point that it causes you physical harm, which is just really scary. And I did want to touch just a little bit, Morgan. You'd said, we were going to talk about social media, and I think we touched on that a little with the blogs, but I think we should maybe brush a little more on that and social media. And it can be really, really great, and it can also be really unfortunate in terms of what people are learning and who they're learning it from, and what we're seeing as consumers. And
So I have to chime in on that a little bit because one thing that I think is super interesting, and I was thinking of this, we've had quite a few eating disorder admits lately, and one currently that I was thinking about this a lot. This kid, I order food for her every day, and she, the first few days, I'd order. I always order a balanced meal. There's like a protein, a starchy food, and then a fruit or vegetable, and then usually whole milk because that's a good source of calories. But I would order a side, and I noticed she would only eat off her plate like the celery and the carrots or the grapes or the salad with the dressing scraped off, So she was going for the what she knew were the lower calorie foods. But I just find it so interesting because I think this is a byproduct of a lot of the health messaging around us that is geared towards weight loss. So basically, low calorie equals healthier because so many people want to lose weight, which objectively isn't true. But these are the messages that kids start to pick up on. So if they're tending towards these obsessive thoughts with what they're eating, they're just kind of going further and further towards those low cal options because that's what we've kind of anointed as
Absolutely.
healthy.
That reminded me of when I was an intern, I'm not going to say where, but a dietetic intern, we would always eat lunch together. And I remember the ladies that I would have lunch with were like, oh, our last intern, she was so healthy. She was a dietetic intern. And they were like, she was so healthy. She would basically just like pick around her plate and just eat the vegetables and leave everything else. Like she was so healthy. And there I was, like eating my whole entire meal and everything on my plate. And I'm just like, cool. Yeah. But
Like,
in
is
that
this
situation, I didn't
unhealthy?
even know what to say. I'm just like, yeah, cool. Because I'm not about to hate on their last dietetic intern and how she ate. But it was just such a weird environment. And everybody there that I worked with was also trying to lose weight and always trying these new crazy diets that they found online or saw that their friend was doing. So it's just, I mean, once you see a friend or a social media influencer that you really like lose weight or do well, or they look like they're eating super healthy, it's you want to try what they're trying. You know what I mean?
Like you want to
Yeah.
kind of
Yeah. And you're
be
like, well,
part
if
of
it works for
the
them, then it'll work for me.
club.
Well, and I think especially Morgan, from like for someone watching a dietitian do something or a future dietitian, right? We wouldn't have been dieticians during our internship, but even in your internship, people are looking at you and they're like, oh, she's the dietitian. She knows what she's doing. Okay. So if you're a social media influencer and you're one of those dietitians who fucking fear mongers people on social media, I don't even care. Shame on you. It is such a bummer to me when I like follow an RD and they're like just hating on food groups or dietary patterns or, or fucking ice cream, whatever. It makes me so mad when I see dietitians who are like pushing their agenda that's very visibly an agenda, and it's just super frustrating because every person in life has something that they're putting into the world. And as dietitians, we are putting out health, wellness, food, nutrition, right? That is what we went to school for. That's what we want to do. That's what we're passionate about. So whatever you're throwing out into the world, make sure it's fucking making an impact that is positive, people. Don't you be shaming people because they don't eat vegetables. It makes me so mad. So mad, you guys. And I'm also clearly in a mood today, which is why I'm, really letting loose. But yeah, it's just, yes.
So going along with kind of what you're putting out into the world, like what do you guys think can be done to kind of mitigate this orthorexia or kind of hopefully make it so that it's not in the DSM-6 because it's not a thing anymore? I mean, that would be really optimistic, but what do we need to improve on to kind of prevent it?
Well, going back to
Education.
education, going back to social media too, you can pick who you follow. And the people like the personal trainers and the health influencers that you're following that don't have a degree and have no background in nutrition, maybe they're not the best people to follow. Try to find dietitians that you can trust, follow them. Oh, I don't know. It's tough. It's tough
I
because
also,
psychological. I mean, education is important,
yeah.
so psychological.
Like there are those people who are going to be more prone to maybe this as a manifestation of like more of OCD tendencies.
Yeah, and I think a huge improvement will be, like the body positivity movement right now that's happening. That is really, really fabulous, but I think that that's going to have a huge impact on this too, because it's including, diet and exercise talk. I mean, that's a natural piece of body positivity and learning to embrace, eating and bodies of all sizes and all of that. So I think that that 100% will be helping if it's done well and if it's done right.
I think with body positivity, maybe we can start to see more food positivity as well. Like helping people feel good about their food choices and embrace their food story and recognize that, yeah, the salad is lower calorie, but that doesn't mean it's better because you might not need to lose weight. You might not want to lose weight. And so, yeah, have something that's more calorie dense. It's not, and that's one meal. I think just
And you might not even like the taste of the salad. And that sucks
That's
too.
okay.
Eating should be a party in your mouth. It should be delicious.
Do you guys remember the like, oh, what was it? Saying no to the food police in our intuitive eating talk.
Yeah.
No.
Yes.
I don't.
It was like rejecting like the diet culture.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So the way I see that, I think especially around kids, or if there's kids around and you're, say, at a party and you're talking and someone makes a comment, I refuse to engage. If someone says, I am trying to be good, like when you offer them a cookie, like, no, thanks. I don't want the cookie. I'm trying to be good lately. This happens all the time. Like, I would ignore that comment, or I would say, like, you can still be good and eat the cookie. I don't
Yes,
know.
try and counter with I yeah, it's so hard, especially around the youngins of the world, because they're like little sponges, you guys. They are gonna suck up whatever you are saying and whatever they're seeing and whatever you're putting in front of them, So I have been on a, oh my God, it's a little embarrassing. I've been on an America's Next Top Model binge. I never ever had watched it
I
before,
went
and
through that
I
phase,
like,
Libby.
and I love what was the fashion one that I just totally blanked on the name? Not America's Next Top Model. It had Heidi Klum
Oh.
and Tim Gunn, and I
Oh,
you guys. Anyways, it was a fashion design one and I loved it. And then I just it's, you know, it's not running with the same cast anymore, so I don't like it as much. So I was like, I'm gonna try America's Next Top Model. And I started at season one, which was 2003, and it was rough. Like from the low rise Britney Spears jeans to just the way that they talked about bodies and about
Oh,
it was
yeah.
cringe-tastic. I was like, we have come a very long ways in 18 years. Like,
Oh,
unreal. And
interesting.
it was really, honestly, though, I was like, I can't imagine. I'm like covering my puppy's ears. I'm like, God, don't get a complex. Like, because I can't imagine, like, if you had a child and you were watching this show, like, oh my
In
God. It was, yeah.
2003, that was like the period where it was pretty heavy on like the really like showcasing really thin bodies everywhere, right? Like that was
Yeah.
the look.
Yeah.
Yeah, we were, I mean, because it bled in through the 90s. I think the 90s was like the beginning of the ultra thin, and then it bled into
Yeah.
the, you know, early to mid 2000 teens era,
Yeah.
which, yeah.
And
I
now
mean, and
it's
these girls, they're all so beautiful, but they're just, whew,
Yeah.
man.
It's so funny, actually, now that we're on the topic, it's so funny how the ideal body changes over time. Like back in the 90s and the early 2000s, it was just a very like slim, skinny body type that was
Yeah, but sh
ideal.
super
Yes,
tall.
tall, but like small, tall and small. But now, don't you feel like the shift has come to more of like a fit, like people want a fit body now?
Yeah, very
Yeah,
fit,
like
less
the fitness
and
models.
thin. Still super tall.
Yeah.
As someone who's 5'3", I don't have a chance. Such a bummer.
We just can't keep up.
Yeah. Can't keep
Yeah,
up.
Marilyn Monroe era. That's my fave.
Oof, yeah, that's a good
I love her. She might not have been potentially the greatest human that ever lived, but
one.
she did some shit for women's self-confidence, let me
True,
tell you.
true.
Yeah. Well, I don't know how I feel like have we touched on everything with orthorexia? It's always good to like even for me sometimes because I think let's be honest, we all have our own little food rules.
Yes.
And like just pay attention to them and ask your and it's just an opportunity to go, I think the opposite direction would be mindful and intuitive eating. And how does something really make you feel? Like, honestly, guys, today I didn't eat, like, I probably didn't even eat two full servings of veggies. That was what it looked like for me today, you know? And I feel great.
Yeah, and that's okay. I don't have
Okay.
anything else.
No, that's okay. Did we have any questions today?
Oh, I don't think we did a
Oh,
poll. Did you guys do a poll?
oh yeah, no,
I
sure
did
didn't.
not.
Totally forgot.
No
Okay.
questions.
But I'm gonna do one for our Thursday. Is tomorrow Wednesday already?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll put a poll up.
Our
Maybe tonight.
next episode is on weight loss,
Oh,
which
right.
will be
Okay.
really
Just like weight loss in
weight loss in
general?
general, which I think will be fun and
Ooh.
something important to talk about because we bash fad diets a lot. And I think people are confused about what's a healthy way to lose weight. If you want to lose weight, it's okay.
I love
Yeah.
it. I'm very excited for that conversation. That's my most common question,
It'll
actually,
be a good
so
one.
from people,
Yeah.
so.
Okay.
Yeah. All
Good.
right.
You
See
too.
you next time.
Good con.
Thanks for listening to Dietitian Power Hour. Give us a follow on Instagram at Dietitian Power Hour Pod.
You can find us on Spotify or wherever you like to listen, and please drop us some stars if you enjoyed our content.